Make sure to check us out on Letterboxd for written reviews.
For films that we've done not only on the podcast, but outside of the podcast too.
Links in the description below.
Welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast. My name is Samuel.
My name is Jaden.
And this is a podcast where we talk extensively about a certain film and then decide whether it deserves a rewatch from you. You can find us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other place you listen to podcasts. And if you enjoy the show, please leave a like on the YouTube video and you can send us an email at theonerewatchpodcast@gmail.com.
Which we don't check.
I do check it every now and then because that's where we get notifications about whether YouTube's like claimed a video or something. So I'm like, oh, okay.
You should probably check it.
Has our channel been taken down yet? Or, you know, I think we've said some nefarious things over the year or so that we've had the channel, or just, you know, things that, you know, certain nations might look at and say, you know what, I don't like that. You know, YouTube, can you please take
that down?
Eventually
we'll be cancelled.
Yeah, it's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
We're sort of just chilling out on borrowed time, but.
Yep.
Jaden, today I literally almost called you the Northman. That's a great compliment for you.
I'll take that.
Today, what film are we talking about?
So we're talking about Teletubbies, the movie.
Yeah, I think that probably is a movie.
It probably is. We're talking about the Northman. Obviously, Robert Eggers' new movie. You're pretty familiar with his work. You've seen you've seen both of his more prominent movies.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably done other films, but I don't think you could find those other films. It's sort of like,
yeah,
you know, Christopher Nolan's first film was like, what, The Following or something?
Something like that.
How on earth do you watch that movie? It's sort of, it doesn't exist.
If
it's not on DVD,
it's not real.
It's not a movie. You know, just because you showed it to like the Venice Film Festival and nobody else doesn't mean it.
Venice Film Festival.
That's a festival.
It's a festival. It's a very pretentious festival.
Yeah. It does make me wonder when you go to those things, like, what do you do? Just like sit down for like 10 hours and watch like 5 films like throughout the entire day? Like, I don't think that's what happens.
Yeah.
But like, what if you just go in and you just watch like a terrible, terrible film and you're like, well, that was a great time at the prestigious Venice Film Festival. Anyway, so we're talking about The Northman from Robert Eggers. So he has done The Lighthouse and The Witch. And those are two sort of horror movies, but they're not really like your standard horror movies. They're not like, you know, your Halloweens or, you know, your Screams or other horror movies that are just like, you know, bad guy comes in and you got to just escape him, and it's very like intense. Like The Witch is very slow and it's very concerned with things that aren't horror for a while, and then in classic A24 style it ends with a weird cult ambiguous, unexplained scene, which is visually interesting, but narratively confusing and emotionally stale, and then it ends.
It sounds like you don't like it.
Well, I didn't. I think I gave it a 3.5, or maybe, actually, I think I gave it a 3. It was just very slow.
Yeah.
Performances were good, but like most A24 horror films, it doesn't lead to anything interesting. It sort of just likes to think it's very interesting for a while, and then eventually amount to nothing.
Yep.
Which is, you know, you could say about a lot of A24.
Pretty much every A24. Yeah.
It always ends with a cult scene and, you know.
Well, X was pretty funny.
X was good.
Was good. That was very mainstream. Yeah. But
I'm talking about like Ari Aster movies.
Yeah, Hereditary. And,
Midsommar, you know, ends with a, you know, Midsommar's probably the best A24 film I've seen, probably. But
I mean, you've seen The Lighthouse.
Yeah, I did really enjoy The Lighthouse. So then that was a film with Robert Pattinson, recently Batman, and Willem Dafoe, recently Green Goblin.
Do we have to Yeah, that's actually true. Do we have to preface every single time we say Robert Pattinson as to why we are saying Robert Pattinson?
Did I say Robert Pattinson?
Yeah, you did. But okay. Should we preface it every time just so our audience doesn't
think somebody just comes along and just finds a podcast accidentally and just thinks, why on earth are they pronouncing it like that? And it's just unexplained, and they wander about just it. Just
rewatch Lore, you know?
They just get confused for about 5 seconds, and then they move on with their lives.
It's like a tactic to make them watch all of our videos.
Yes.
You have to go back and figure out
Yes, and then if we were really cruel, what would we do? When did we first
come up with it? I think it was Tenet.
Yeah. Just delete the Tenet podcast.
They'll never find it.
It's like episode 17 goes missing, so it goes from episode 16 to episode 80. Like, what happened here? Like, YouTube took it down. Okay, so The Lighthouse, I really enjoyed. Very pretentious, but like, is very interesting from scene to scene. It's slow, but it's also very engaging and very visceral, and two incredible performances. And it kind of does lead to something interesting. There is a bit of a mystery box that isn't really resolved in the end. But the thing that differentiates The Lighthouse from The Witch is that The Lighthouse is interesting from scene to scene.
Yep.
It's also very funny. Very funny and fantastic performances. The Northman is completely different to both of those, but then kind of has similar elements to both. You know, it's not particularly fast-paced. It kind of has some ambiguities, but this film, The Northman, is by far the most accessible Robert Eggers film.
Yeah.
And he talked about this. He said, you know, not everyone wants to watch two men go crazy in a lighthouse for 2 hours, or, you know, a family do farming for like an hour and 30 minutes.
Yep. So that's what The Witch is about.
Kind of. Yeah.
Just them on a farmhouse.
Things go wrong. But like, you don't find out what's going wrong until like the last 20 minutes.
Yeah. I don't want to watch that.
And everyone's talking in Shakespeare. Oh. And so it's. And that's the thing with The Lighthouse as well. But
that's fun.
Willem Dafoe put so much effort into it that it's very fun.
Yeah.
But it is quite kind of insufferable to listen to Shakespeare for, you know, 2 hours. You do definitely have to turn the subtitles on for those movies.
This is Shakespeare as well. So
yeah, in parts. But then there's also like some simple English.
Yeah.
Like, you know, towards the end of the film, I think it kind of almost drops.
It's just got a weird infatuation with Shakespeare.
Yeah, because obviously English was not a language back when this was, you know, this film would have taken place ages and ages and ages. Well, it was like a couple hundred years after the AD, so after the death
of 800 AD of Christ, or
right?
It's some form of Nordic.
Yeah, language. So like English is far off.
Yeah,
at this stage, so you know, what do? Make him talk like Shakespeare, a bit weird, but I guess, you know, he does make it seem like, you know, a culture that you don't know, that it's like an old culture, you know, talking in Shakespeare, I guess. You know, it's not language that you would hear walking down the street. So it does sort of take you to a different world, but it wouldn't be how the Vikings were talking to each other.
Anyway, I'll give a plot synopsis before people start clicking off. So, Prince Amleth is on the verge of becoming a man when his father is brutally murdered by his uncle, who kidnaps the boy's mother. 2 decades later, Amleth is now a Viking who raids Slavic villages. He soon meets a seeress who reminds him of his vow: save his mother, kill his uncle, avenge his father.
So it's very similar to every other movie that's ripped off Hamlet or used Hamlet. So The Lion King.
I think that's my major concern with it, but
yeah,
we can get into that.
Yeah, it is very simple. It's a revenge, simple revenge story. but it does have, you know, elements that are unique to the film.
Yeah.
But at its core, his father dies, and his he devotes himself to killing the dude that killed his father.
Yeah.
And that's how we get our movie. But along the way, it sort of, you know, I guess it sort of gets sidetracked with other things. You know, there are different elements introduced.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it is similar to The Lion King and even movies like Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
Any movie where towards the start of the film, somebody dies and the rest is about getting,
revenge.
That cathartic, you know, decapitation or whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, that's what puts in motion the rest of the film.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's simple, but it's also quite effective, I think. You know, if you get connected to a character and then you see the character die, you know, you want to see, you know, some vengeance.
Yep.
Some vengeance.
Okay. I mean, Batman.
Exactly. There was a lot of mentions of vengeance.
Yeah.
So it seems like if you want to make a pretty decent movie in 2022,
Vengeance
is the go-to theme. So let's go to some general thoughts. We'll stay spoiler-free. Would you recommend this film to someone who hasn't seen it?
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I'd probably say, just to preface it, I haven't seen The Lighthouse or The Witch. Like you said at the start, this seems to be more accessible. So if you're just into, like, brutal action, like, I mean, this is going to be good for you.
Yeah.
But I've just got more of an interest in The Lighthouse. So I think I really want to watch The Lighthouse now. Mm. You've just showed me a clip from The Lighthouse and it looks...
Fond more, of me lobster.
Yeah, yeah. It looks more along my sort of lines of what I want to watch. I'd say about, you know, a few years ago, I would have wanted to watch this a lot more. But yeah, something about this just felt very, very straightforward. It was very... Right. Simplistic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you like that, you're gonna like this movie.
Yeah. I think this is gonna be a big hit for anyone who's a fan of Vikings, obviously. And I don't think we've quite had, from what I know, I don't think we've quite had a Viking movie quite like this.
You don't see many Vikings movies.
Yeah. There's obviously the Vikings TV show, which I've watched most of, and it is quite good for a few seasons. Like most good TV shows, it sort of like...
Die off at the end.
Yeah, drifts off towards the end. And I've also heard that it can be quite historically inaccurate as well. But I did very much enjoy that show. Even though I still have not finished it to this day, because they kill the main character in like season 5, so like what's the point?
Oh, what's the point in doing, you know, that?
And then they go on for another few seasons, and it's like, well, why am I still watching this?
Yeah.
But very good show, and if you weren't aware of the historical inaccuracies, it seems very authentic to the time period, I guess. But very, very cool, but no Viking movies in the mainstream, that's for sure. And Vikings are just so cool, man. Like, it's a very like interesting time.
Wear like the wolves on their heads and...
Yep, and just the...
It's just cool, man.
The combat techniques and just the way of life is just, like, incredibly disturbing.
I've seen a bit of Vikings, like, a few of the first episodes, and that seems so much more, like... calm than like this.
Well, they try in Vikings, you sympathize with the characters, like they try to make them just normal humans that every now and then, you know, take some axes and go and like pillage and you know, rape some people.
Yeah.
And but you're supposed to like care about them before they do that. And you know, there's even in Vikings, there's a pretty clear Hamlet storyline with his brother, and you know, there's lots of Shakespearean elements just in Viking media for some reason. But yeah, lots of, you know, really interesting stories, like Viking stories and stuff. But I think this is probably the first movie to sort of depict the culture in this way,
yep.
But then also like make the Viking like the central character. They're not like the enemies, because we care for the, you know, the protagonist who's also, you know, killing people in very, very violent ways, but we like that
yeah
because he's the main character. We condone that sort of violence.
Me like Viking. Viking can...
But yeah, I do enjoy the show, but I am, I do think this is probably the best Viking thing I've ever seen.
Depiction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, this is incredibly historically accurate. Like, apparently there was Robert Eggers, in some interview, said that he employed, like, many, many historians. And cool. He said, confidently looked at the camera and said, like, this is the most historical, like, historically accurate Viking movie ever.
Yeah.
So...
Well, gotta, I trust him.
Yeah, same. So, and you've got to, you know, to make that sort of claim, you do have to, you know, provide, like, the evidence. And
you got to back it up.
Just look at, like, the costume design in this movie and everything like that. It's pretty clear that, like, Robert Eggers didn't just, like, come up with that stuff. Like, it's all, it seems... It's
taken from somewhere.
Very real, you know, and there's the amount of detail there as well. So, are you going to rewatch this film?
I do this thing on Letterboxd. I don't know if you know about it.
Oh, yeah.
But I do like a rewatchable stamp, and it's essentially like I recommend a rewatch. I actually didn't put it on this.
Right.
Mainly because, I don't know, I just can't see myself sitting down, at least in like the near future, to watch this again. Mm. I don't know, something just about it. Just,
yeah.
It's one of those movies, it's like a one-time watch. And,
yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go back to the cinema to see it, but if it comes out on 4K and, you know, I see it on sale, I think I'll probably pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily because I want to see what the hell's going on with that aspect ratio, but also because...
I'm pretty sure it didn't change.
It definitely did. No, it did.
It did.
It 100% did.
Because I looked on IMDb and it's...
It yeah, it says... I looked as well and it says 235, but it was not 235. Like, I don't know what.
Maybe we're just seeing stuff.
But A24 movies do this, man. When I was watching High Life, another A24 film with Robert Pattinson, the final scene in that movie is like them going into a wormhole, and the aspect ratio changes for that scene as they go into the wormhole.
Yeah.
You don't notice until like the very end, and you're like, oh my gosh, like
it's changed.
It's like with Nolan's IMAX scenes, you don't really notice it. It just has that like whoa, like,
and then when like it,
I've been immersed,
and then when you like know it's coming, it's like, oh
yeah, it's like, oh, the screen's just changing all over the place. But like, this was used very effectively. It's like you go into this wormhole and suddenly it comes towards you, like you get sort of immersed in the screen more because it literally just gets bigger. But like, for some reason, the aspect ratio changed at like maybe the start of the third act or something.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I got a, but even the screen wasn't even going all the way up to the top and all the way down to the bottom.
It was like bars, a box. Yeah.
It was like a black bars all the way around. So very weird. But A24 movies, I know this isn't an A24 movie, but these weird artsy movies, they love changing the aspect ratio. And sometimes you gotta know why. Like, what is wrong with just your standard Letterboxd, fill the whole screen with the black bars at the top and the bottom?
It didn't really have any reason to change the, like, why?
Yeah, exactly. That's why.
That's the main question. Like,
I get if you're going into a wormhole, that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
You know, you want to feel like you're being immersed, thrown into this wormhole, so the screen goes up and you don't, like, register that the screen's literally just changed. You just feel like you're being sucked into it. But like, why would it do this?
Why?
Yeah,
that is the question.
Yeah. And it's a good one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I will rewatch it when it comes out on 4K.
Okay.
Because well, I do. It'll look great. You just know that it's going to look really good.
Beautiful on 4K.
Yeah.
This was shot in Iceland, so all of those practical scenes. Literally the place where they said
it was. How about that?
Yeah.
That's a first.
It's from Iceland.
You know, Black Widow will say, like, oh, look, we're in Norway. It's like, you're in Atlanta, bro. Yeah.
Nah, bro, you're in an Atlantan, like, warehouse.
Exactly. Literally. You're in a green box.
You're on a green screen.
It's like, yeah, bro, like, oh, look, now we're in Greenland. It's like, bro, you're in a green box, man.
Well, to a certain degree, you're in Greenland.
Yeah, reminds me of that that clip where it's like Daisy Ridley's like, I've never seen this much green in the whole galaxy. And it just cuts to like a behind the scenes shot and it's like just Rey and the Millennium Falcon in front of a green screen. But yes, it does bring us to a very valid positive for this movie, that it's a great looking film.
Oh, it's beautiful, man.
And you can tell that they went to the real locations, even seeing behind the scenes shots with Anya Taylor-Joy and which Skarsgård?
Alexander Skarsgård.
Alexander. When they're in the spa sort of, you know, the hot springs sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You probably could have gotten away with doing that shot with a bit of green screen. But no, it's 100% real. It's literally
yeah,
a shot, but somebody's just filming.
Yeah, it's just back.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's one shot where they're sort of riding on the horses. And there's like this massive mountain behind with like a waterfall, and it just looks so good, man. Like
you got Lord of the Rings vibes.
Massive Lord of the Rings vibes.
Yeah.
I'm so happy that there's at least, you know, someone out there still doing practical effects like this, because it's a bloody beautiful looking movie.
It definitely is, and it deserves praise for that, because we do not see it enough nowadays.
And when you like think about the budget as well, I'll just touch on the budget briefly. The Lighthouse was 11 million. It made 17 million, I think.
Right.
So that's not a very successful movie.
But you also do have to take into account that for you like your superhero movies, they usually say, and a lot of people on Twitter get very angry when you say this, but this is like the standard thing that you do, is to find out the real budget, you double the budget because you have to take into account marketing costs. Now that's obviously a very broad way to do that, which is why some people on Twitter get very angry when you say that they're, you know, Shazam didn't make a lot of money, you know, they get very, very angry. But when you double Shazam's budget, you know, they and then you compare it with the return, it doesn't really get there.
No way it got there.
But so
this was 90 million.
And the Lighthouse, right, wouldn't have had much of a marketing budget. Like it wouldn't have had double. And then you also have to take into account, you know, other revenues, like, because they would have, you know, loaned it to a streaming service or, you know, sold DVD.
Well, that's just the box office. So obviously the box office is numbers from cinemas. But yeah, this was in quotations it may 19
even,
million.
It may have even been a limited release. It might not have actually come to all of the cinemas. Yeah, because
I can't see it coming to all the cinemas.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't see this coming to the cinema where I was at back in 2019. Was when it came out, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so the budget for this movie was
90 million.
90. That's actually quite a lot for a film like this, but then you do have to take into account, like, they are sort of traveling the world here, and there is a lot of practical stuff, and there's a lot of very expensive actors, that's for sure.
But it always comes down to, like, we always do this, but just comparing it to something like, you know, I'm not going to compare it to Endgame, because obviously Endgame's budget is so high because you've got all of these actors and actresses in the movie. That's why it's 300 million or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But something like Black Widow, which has a 200, I want to say $220 million budget, you've got essentially like three big names. You've got Florence Pugh, Scarlett Johansson, and David Harbour, I think his name is.
David Harbour,
Stranger Things.
I don't think he would have cost a lot.
He's pretty big, but even then, like, $220 million isn't justified by the way that movie looks.
This movie has a better cast than Black Widow.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Anya Taylor-Joy, I think she probably costs more than Florence Pugh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably similar actually, but Scarlett Johansson probably does cost a lot of money.
Like, it makes you think, like.
I mean, we know that she costs a lot of money. She bloody sued them. She sued bloody Mickey Mouse, bro.
Like, where is Disney's money going? Like, for a movie like this that is $90 million and it looks this good, like, come on.
Yeah.
And we said this with Ambulance. That was, I want to say it's like 60.
I think it was, yeah, I think it might have even been 40. 40?
I want to say 45, now that I'm thinking about it. Yeah. Like, these movies right, look that movie good.
Fantastic.
Bro. Yeah. Yes. So, you know, these film studios need to start up in their game because these movies, for their budget, look fantastic. Look
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And even, I think, taken to consideration, something like Dune, I think, was, you know, around 200 million mark.
Mm-hmm.
But they still, they went to the real places.
Yep.
They have a cast that was about as stacked as Black Widow. Oh, yep. No, sorry, Endgame, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've got to think of all those actors, man. Like,
I'd say Endgame.
A lot of Endgame actors in that movie. and a lot of DC actors as well. Big names. And they went to real places.
Mm.
And they still managed to keep it.
Yeah,
below something like Black Widow.
I'd say like Civil War is around about like the same as Dune in terms of
right.
names in the movie.
Yeah, but then compare the airport fight scene to the scene where the worm shows up with the sand crawlers in Dune.
It's not even fair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think the difference there is there's an artistic sort of drive behind one of them.
Yeah.
And one's behind just the there other.
For fun.
The other is to just get it out for the purpose of getting it out by a certain release date.
Yep.
So yeah. All right. Well, let's dive into some of this cast then. As we were just speaking of them before,
mm-hmm.
they are, you know, it's quite a stacked cast. Alexander Skarsgård, as
Amleth.
Amleth.
Mm-hmm.
So, oh my goodness. You know where he's from? Godzilla vs. Kong.
Yeah, yep. yep.
But the only reason why I know this guy is because of the Tarzan movie.
Oh my god, he's from Tarzan.
No, of course, bro, because he's ripped in Tarzan, man.
It's not even in his, like, popular movies.
And he was ripped in 2016 for Tarzan, and he decided he wanted to do it again in 2022. 6 years later, so...
You know. That's by David Yates.
Is that the Harry Potter guy?
That's the Harry Potter guy.
Yeah, what? It was a bad movie, by the way. That was a
bad movie.
Yeah, Margot Robbie is Jane, bro.
Oh, I forgot Margot Robbie was in that. What is this movie?
Yeah, so he... Look, I'm not a particularly big fan of his.
Mm.
He's probably, like, my least favourite Skarsgård, to be honest. Like, I gotta say... Stellan, is that the main
thing? Stellan's the father.
Yeah, Stellan's probably my favourite.
Bill Skarsgård's obviously
it, right?
It, yeah. Pennywise.
So he would be my second because that was a great performance.
Mm.
But, yeah, what did you think of Alexander Skarsgård?
I'm just going to say this as like a broad point. None of the acting performances really stood out for me. Like, right. To me, the acting wasn't the strong suit of this movie.
Actually, I do agree.
That would go to like... I've said it in my review, but cinematography, sound design, costuming, and even the soundtrack is probably like the main points of what I find good about this movie. But yeah, none of the acting performances are really, you know, wow. You know?
I do get what you're saying. I do. I think everybody sort of did their role.
Mm.
And that was about it. I mean, I've seen some people saying that Nicole Kidman was great as... the queen, or as you know, his mother, I guess.
Yeah,
but I didn't think she was that good.
I think it's just screen time as well. Like, not many, they each sort of get their own scenes, but they're not on screen for that long.
Yeah, it's only Alexander Skarsgård that's, yeah. And Anya Taylor-Joy gets a bit of, did I say it right?
Yeah, Anya, yeah,
that's a first.
So you're like waiting for my permission.
So she gets quite a bit of screen time, obviously, because she becomes like the love interest.
But it's not the best I've seen of her.
Yeah, and I think she was better in Last Night in Soho, to be honest.
100%.
Just chewing up the scenery a bit more, having a bit more presence. This is more of like a subdued role. In fact, everyone's got a bit more of a subdued role, apart from Alexander.
Yeah.
Because he's doing the whole, I'm a Viking, animal dude. Like, I'm a...
Yeah.
Ethan Hawke, he was quite good at the start. I mean, you know, there was a bit of a reliance on him to be effective as the father because he's literally like the plot of the movie.
Yeah.
And he had like maybe 10 minutes to do that.
Mm.
And I feel like he got there, but like wasn't particularly interesting, I guess. But
it's very similar to Oscar Isaac in terms of Dune.
Okay.
He has a bit more screen time, Oscar Isaac.
Okay.
But when you compare it to a two-parter, like Dune 1 and 2, I guess it's the same sort of ratio in terms of
The Northman. Definitely more in Dune.
It's more in Dune, yeah.
Because you get to, in Dune, you get to feel and experience the dad in action. You get to actually see what sort of man he is. And one of my major complaints about this movie is the fact that the entire plot rests on Ethan Hawke's character, the dad, because the dad gets killed. But we don't know, apart from a few expository sort of lines towards the end, if he was a good man or not.
Yeah.
Because if he was a bad person and he deserved to get killed, then...
why do we care?
Then the story completely shifts. And, I would still care. It would still be a very interesting story. But it would go the way of, oh, this is a cautionary tale. Like, you shouldn't just murder people, once you've sort of taken on an oath. If somebody says avenge me and they're a terrible person,
then, yeah,
why would you do this? Why have
what's
you just,
your motive?
Why aren't you thinking independently and saying, should I actually be doing this? But then what if he's like, the nicest guy?
Yeah,
he wants the best for his people, and then he gets murdered. And you're like, well, let's go and kill everyone because the world's terrible.
So maybe that's where the ambiguity comes in. Was that intentional that they just left that out? Or?
It kind of was addressed, but it was an unreliable source because it was addressed by the mother.
Yeah,
and she's a very unreliable source because she could just say whatever. Like,
yeah.
And in the confrontation that she has, it's like her life is sort of at stake there.
Yeah.
And so she might as well just like make up random stuff. Like, she's not a reliable source of information.
Yep.
It's like when Darth Vader tells Luke that he's his father.
Spoilers!
It's an unreliable source, right? Yeah. Because it's Darth Vader. So in the next movie, what do you get? You get Yoda, who's a reliable source.
Same.
So in this movie, there is no reliable source that the dad
was
actually a good person, because if he's not, then this is a very different movie to if he was a good person.
Yeah.
And I kind of do like the ambiguity there, but I needed a little bit of maybe Ethan Hawke governing, making a decision, like maybe just one decision where we get to see, does he actually care about his people, or is his wife right to leave him and kill him.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, are we entering spoiler territory?
Well, that's in the trailer, isn't it? But
I quite like the trailer. I think the trailer's quite good. I don't even know why I'm throwing this in here, but I think the trailer is like one of the best I've seen in quite some time.
In terms of showing stuff that's
not that
integral to the movie.
Yeah, like it. Most we've said this before, but a lot of trailers just like show like the full
The Batman,
everything, and then you get into it and it's like,
I've seen this movie already.
Yeah, I'm just watching like a bigger version of the trailer. This does a pretty good job. Like you see scenes where like he throws like a spear back to like the villain. That's so cool. That's so badass. It doesn't like show like the full synopsis, so I went into this like completely not knowing anything.
Yeah.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Mm. The trailer does sort of say like, okay, the father's going to die. But then apart from that, as soon as that happens.
Yeah. Well, you see it in the trailer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then, because I think I've only seen it maybe once or twice. But after that stage, then it becomes something new and you don't know what's going to happen. It takes interesting turns.
Mm.
So, yeah. All right, we've already talked a bit about the visuals, but I think it's worth noting that the cinematography is just one of the best things about this film.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, film nerds get a bit trigger happy with the word cinematography, cinematography this, cinematography that. As long as it's got good cinematography, it's a great film. But genuinely, this film is beautiful, and I don't think there was a single shot that was poorly framed or...
I've got some issues with like the gates of Valhalla. I think it's Valhalla, which is like
the Viking heaven.
Yeah, I've got some issues with that in terms of like really deep like mythology.
Okay.
Like Viking mythology and
right.
how it went all into the sort of like just really supernatural stuff.
Yeah. Well, as like a story concept?
Or? As a story concept and in terms of just visuals. Like okay. the whole thing with like the tree of like the kings and queens.
Yeah,
and
okay. That was a bit weird.
That was a bit weird to me. And like the heart and...
Yeah, that was a bit weird.
Yeah.
Was that like a family tree, I think?
So... The way I understood it, are we in spoiler territory?
Yeah, okay, let's just, I mean, we're not yet, but let's just say we're in spoiler territory, okay? If you want to go and see this movie, I would very much recommend you do so.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a few things in this movie in terms of the visual elements mm-hmm. that are very weird and very artsy, almost pretentious, but we'll get into that shortly. But one of them... There's a few, but one of them is like this weird, starts with the heart and then it travels upwards and you see like some sort of roots or veins or, and it branches and suddenly there's a human there.
Mm.
So what do you think that was?
So I just understood it as like...
I didn't know what it was like until the very end.
It's just like the royal... family essentially. Yeah,
it's just like the family tree,
but right? I don't know why there's a connection to the heart, like, and then you got like the whole Nicole Kidman when she dies she says like thank you for not stabbing me in the heart
and it's she says in the heart thank you, so he does stab her, he stabs it there
in the heart, so maybe it's just like a quick death or maybe it has something to do with
but she was saying thank you, so as far as I'm concerned it wasn't quick enough.
So
the bloody the dude he was trying to get revenge on got a quicker death, that's for goddamn sure. You know, that was a much quicker death than the Kidman's
bro. Yeah. That's pretty cool how it comes full circle as well with like the decapitation.
Yeah, well that gets decapitated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never picked up on that, but that does happen.
Yeah, I mean, a few people do get
decapitated. There's a lot of decapitation.
Yeah, even a horse at one stage.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're not a fan of the violence, then stay clear from this. Probably should have said that when we were recommending the movie, to be honest. But
probably, but I mean, people should know.
Yeah. In terms of the other ambiguous elements, there was some sort of mystical, supernatural element, which, by the way, Robert Eggers always has in his films. The main character goes into a house that was just filled with, was it women that got thrown into that house and then burnt, they burnt the house when they were
at the start with the village.
Yeah, when they were raiding the village and they put some people in the
house. So that was all the children.
All the children.
Yeah, you didn't see that?
Well, I thought it was all the women, but...
No, they would...
They would take the woman, wouldn't they? They wouldn't, you know...
They wouldn't kill the women.
Yeah.
For specific reasons. Yeah, not say why.
The children, though, they can...
They've got no use for them.
Yeah.
So they just put them all in the house and...
They just light it on fire. Yes. Well, we'll get to that.
Hotbox the children.
But then afterwards, our Viking hero, after killing all those children... goes into that house and meets like this weird sort of spirit thing.
Yeah.
And she sort of reminds him, well, sort of how I took it was that he kind of forgotten about this pledge.
Yep.
Because, you know, so much time has passed between witnessing his father being murdered as a child and him sort of becoming a, you know, full-on Viking warrior. And so much time had passed that he kind of forgotten this pledge.
Yeah.
Maybe he just got sidetracked murdering children. You know, it happens.
Anakin moment.
It happens. And so he decided, you know, he sort of had a epiphany. He's like, oh, yeah, I forgot to do that. So then, because then he sort of takes action to, you know, to start that plot.
To go back and, find like his true purpose. I'm just looking up. So it's, Ceres is the person.
Right.
But I don't know the connection to, like, what Ceres is.
In terms of Viking lore.
A woman who predicts events or developments.
Okay.
So it's
just like a spirit guide.
It's just like a witch, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we also see like some crows at one stage, which, you know,
you picked out
help the Vikings. Yeah, so in Odin. In the Viking series, the crows are Odin. So when the main character's like speaking to Odin or whatever, it's like a good omen for like your crow to show up and be like, you know,
yep,
what's going on, bro? that's how you sort of know that like Odin is listening or whatever. But in this, like, the crows just, like, literally help him get out of a sticky situation at one stage. And so it makes me think that originally I did think it was Odin, but then he, the main character, looked at the crow and said, father. So maybe that's the spirit of his father or something, you know? Maybe it's
Odin's not his father, because that would be Thor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, yeah, his father's Ethan Hawke, right? So...
oh, true.
So is that like his, like, so the main character looked and he was like, oh, father. So maybe the crow is like a symbol of the dead or something, and so then he just projects like his father onto that. Or
yeah,
maybe it is just Odin, he thinks it's his dad or whatever, but
who knows?
I have no idea. I tried to explain what I thought and I got more confused as I went.
Yeah, but it's stuff like that is pretentious. Like, I think that's where you draw the line, and it's like, wait, that wasn't even explained. Like, that's, you can't call that pretentious, and you know, the day's done. Like, that's just, that's just loose ends.
Yeah, because there is a fine line between having an ambiguous element and just being so pretentious that, you know, you're so caught up with the ambiguities that you forget to give us like even a hint as to like what it is.
Yeah.
And that was this. That was the.
I think that's the issue with it.
With the crows.
Yeah.
But the spirit was fine, I think, because you know we need some sort of exposition machine to go, you know, this is your fate or whatever. Because the main character is so driven by this destiny that he has. Mm. So he needs somebody to give him that destiny. Yep. Otherwise, we'd just say like, bro, come on, man. Like, your father died like 20 years ago. You know, just live your life, you know, just go around murdering some children and have some fun, you know, just forget about it. Move on. But like, we need an external force.
You need some sort of,
get back on it, bro.
Yeah.
Like, your grind is not over yet. You know, hustle is not over, you know.
Yeah.
No holidays for you.
But then you've got the whole, and this is another issue I have with it, the whole some sort of albino lady riding a horse to the gates of Valhalla.
So that's a Valkyrie, I think.
So that's a Valkyrie.
Yeah.
But what's the symbolism of that?
They never even explain. Well, I think that's a Viking thing. I think that's a, you know, that's sort of like the person that takes you to to Valhalla.
But what was the purpose of it?
Yeah, there was no
purpose. Never went to Valhalla.
Well, they do at the end, but, like, we don't see it. Like, we see him ascend up there. But, like, obviously they're not going to show us because, they never would. Because it's just cooler to not show us.
It was a pretty cool scene, though, where they her, like, riding up.
Yeah, I think, did they cut the music at that? I think I just remember it being, like, a pretty big moment.
Yeah.
But I think they may have cut the music for that. And just like,
they might have.
Yeah,
I like the scene where it's like she's riding on the horse and it's kind of like a POV, and then you just like go off the cliff, and then it just like keeps going.
Oh
up.
Yeah.
But like, and then there's like this really weird cut, and it's like, it's just like a horse like going up on nothing, and then you see like the gates. It's just like a really weird camera angle.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've just got a bit.
Yeah, and then you get like her screaming into the camera.
Yeah.
But I will say though, the costuming, and I even noticed that she had done something to her teeth.
Yeah.
Not wearing braces, I saw some people.
Some sort of metal plating. Yeah.
Yeah. But just everything from the costume design to like the makeup, you know, this should win some major Oscars. I think.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Definitely costume design for me. And, you know, we'll see what the rest of the year has to offer. I mean, you've got to think that Greg Fraser for Batman's got to be up there, but also for, like, cinematography, you know.
Yeah.
It should, in my opinion, so far at least, get a nomination.
Uh-huh.
But it is a tough competition.
It is a very tough competition. Yeah.
The Oscars will want to, you know, they want to give, you know, some comic book movies some wins because, you know, they need to boost their ratings.
They need that viewership as well. Like, if people see the Batman's nominated for, like, Best Picture, they'll be like,
yeah,
time to tune into the Oscars.
And, I mean, Greg Fraser just won for June, so he's also on a bit of a hot streak, so that's his sort of narrative as well.
Yeah, it was cinematography.
Yeah, he did win.
So maybe the Oscars would just be like...
Australian, by the way.
Is he Australian?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Greg Fraser, bro.
Let's go.
Literally probably, like, one of the most exciting cinematographers working.
100%, man. Yeah.
But yeah, so the Northman's costuming for me was just incredible. Bring you into the time period. It was all authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently the Vikings TV show had leather just to like make them look cool, but that was like...
Leather wasn't invented yet.
It was not invented yet. It had not, you know, they had not decided to skin cows and, you know, burn it and, you know, see what they can make. But not at that stage in the time period.
Mm.
But apparently this was very authentic. So you've got to give props for that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Love my accuracy there.
In terms of the sound, what did you think of the score?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. We had a brief chat about this beforehand. There's nothing that stands out.
Specific tracks, you mean?
Specific tracks, but it's a very, very solid soundtrack. Mm. I mean, I could see another nomination coming its way in terms of...
Maybe sound design.
Definitely sound design. I thought the sound design was some of the best I've seen in quite some time.
Bro, when he's headbutting the dude and he just keeps on headbutting him, and then you just hear his skull where it's like cave in.
And then you turn over to me and you're like, okay, that's just puts the Batman to shame.
Yeah. Someone needs to like put those two clips back to back and you know.
But no,
I'm vengeance.
Sound design was fantastic, and you've got those scenes where it just shows the volcano blowing up for some reason. And like, it was loud. Like, I don't know if you felt this, but like my ears were like...
It was pretty loud.
It was very loud.
And I really love just like the simple yet very effective like use of drums and, you know, big loud instruments that, you know, didn't seem like an electronic score. It seemed very like authentic and simple.
Mm-hmm.
But it worked very well. It sort of reminds me of scores like in Joker, you know, very little instruments.
Mm.
You know, it's not a very complex thing, but
mm-hmm.
when it goes, you know, it really has the moments. And it's not like a score that sits back and mm-hmm. lets the visuals do, like it really gets involved, you know, it gets really loud and, you know, really amps up the energy when it needs to.
I felt it was pretty similar to June in terms of it was very like wind instruments and like heavy on the percussion, like native drums and all of that. And the thing with June is that Hans Zimmer, you know, he'd been looking at Star Wars and Star Trek and all of like your famous space operas, and they're meant to be like otherworldly sort of stuff, and like they're like featuring like you know, trumpets and all that, and it's something that we would see on our world, so he was like, okay, well, I'm just gonna do something completely different and have like... that's why he's one of the best, man, because he just made like a space opera soundtrack that we've never heard before. Like it almost doesn't sound like space. And that's because we've never witnessed anything like that before. And it was very similar to where I'm going with this, is that the Northman was very similar to that, where it's heavy on the percussion and just like beating drums.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, it's not afraid to, you know, really sort of steal the energy of the scene, you know, when nobody's talking and there's some, you know, fighting going on. It's not afraid to just like give you some really loud drums to just like sort of set the tone for the entire film. So, let's have a bit of discussion then about the artsy sort of nature of the film. We've touched on it a bit so far, but we've got a bit of an issue just with, you know, your standard A24 sort of fare. A lot of films, they try to be very artsy and they sort of forget to be interesting.
Yeah.
How did this fare for you on that sort of scale of from pretentious to MCU? where does it go?
Because that's the scale.
Yeah. Well, see, on one hand, we have, you know, I'd say one of the most pretentious films I've seen is probably Licorice Pizza, right? So, on one hand, you have a film. Here are the elements, okay, for a pretentious film, okay? So, first of all, no plot. Second of all, you've got to have an actor who, or an actor or actress who you've never heard of, but everyone is suddenly saying that they give like an incredible performance. Got to have Oscar buzz.
Yep.
Got to have a director who has Oscar buzz.
Yep.
And fifth, got to have some weird sexual shit in the movie, bro. Got to have some weird sexual stuff in the movie. Okay, those are your five elements. Okay, don't ask me to recount them because I've forgotten them already.
But that's the basis.
That's how you get a pretentious film. Okay, and then you know we have all of the films of cinema.
Yeah.
Okay, all of the films, and then finally on the other end of the scale, the far end of the scale, we have. Oh, what's the most standard MCU movie? Like Iron Man 2. Like
Ant-Man.
Yeah, Ant-Man and the Wasp. That's probably a better one. So we have, on one hand, we have Licorice Pizza, and then on the other hand, we have Ant-Man and the Wasp. Where does the Northman fit for you?
How do you go about ranking that? I mean,
on a scale from pretentious to
on a scale of Licorice Pizza to Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, which one is it closer to?
Honestly, I'd say it's like bang in the middle.
Yes, that's what you want.
Yeah,
that's what you want.
It's like right in the middle, like it, literally like 50-50.
Yeah,
like it's not 0.1% either way.
Yeah, yeah.
It's right in the middle.
So what are the pretentious elements and what are the...
There's definitely a weird sex scene in this movie. I mean, we're not complaining, but it happens.
Yeah.
There's definitely some like unknown actors in there and actresses in there. They're not the stars of the show by any means. I mean, yeah. This is a pretty... It's a pretty, you know, A-list cast. You've got some pretty big names in there. Alexander Skarsgård hasn't done a lot of stuff, though. Like, he's fairly, like, unknown.
Yeah.
Obviously, his name isn't as pretty... It's a pretty big budget name.
In terms of sort of...
Well, you hear Skarsgård. You know what Skarsgård is.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, like, yeah. No, I don't disagree with you on that. In terms of the pretentious elements of the film, like, you know, the slow pacing...
Yeah.
The ambiguous religious elements or, you know,
yeah,
cult stuff and unexplained plot and then or like, no plot, you know, does it have any of those elements at all? Or?
And then, like, Anya Taylor-Joy's, like, a witch. What is
yes,
she?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
They don't even explain that. Like, she somehow makes the ship, like...
Yeah, she's got some magic powers.
Some sort of airbending, last airbender powers going on there.
Yeah, well, then she also poisons people throughout the movie as well.
But I think that's just her, like, mushroom stews. Yeah.
It's like, oh, you know, these aren't very good.
Yeah. Maybe we need another rewatch.
Yeah, but I don't think we'll get any answers. I think we'll probably just get more questions, to be honest.
Yeah. But in terms of pretentiousness, this is right in the middle, which is a pretty good balance. Like... It's not too hit. Like, we've been bashing a bit in terms of, you know, all of these elements and, you know, religious elements and really heavy on the mythology. But at the same time, like, it's man kill with axe and, you know, brutal decapitation.
You gotta spice it up, you know.
Yeah. Like, it's still got all of that, like, gore and just heavy-handed brutality.
Yeah.
Like, if you're watching it for that, you're gonna get that stuff. And then, in the meantime, just put up with all of the Anya Taylor-Joy's being some sort of witch in the meantime.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, it's a pretty good mix.
Yeah, I do agree. I think, you know, there's good pretentious elements in the sense that, like, there's a bit of ambiguity, but the main positive for me, I think, from the pretentious side of things is, like, the mythology. And, you know, just how deep it goes into... you know, I think all of the ambiguous scenes with the spirits and the crows and stuff, I think they probably all do have a basis in mythology.
Yeah.
But, like, they're just not explained. So I at least respect that there's a basis for those, because when you watch a completely original film like Hereditary and the final thing is, like, some religious thing, well, like, I'm not a, you know, I'm not a religious expert or scholar, you know, so how am I supposed to know what the hell this movie's been about?
Yeah.
You know, so that's what angers me about movies like that. But this, I kind of, I have, like, I can feel safe knowing that there's
a reason behind it. If you search it up, you'll get an answer. Sure. Is essentially what you're saying.
You can watch a video on YouTube about it.
You'll search it up, it'll say the crows represent his dead father. The Valkyrie shows, you know, him taking him to the gates of Valhalla.
Yeah.
You'll get all your answers, where if you search up Hereditary Final Ending, you get 500 videos that each have a different
What was the point
meaning.
Of licorice pizza question mark?
Do you like this water bed? Hey, it was in the movie, don't cancel me.
But yeah, so on the other hand though, we do have some really, really good action scenes.
Oh yeah.
And that village fight.
Village pillage.
Yeah, the village pillage. The spear just starts it off. That's just like the energy of the film right there in like 10 seconds. Random dude throws a spear at the Viking. It does a pretty crap job at throwing it. Viking catches it, which is kind of insane, turns around, just like yeets it and like just knocks the dude like right out. And that energy, and then they're all just like screaming like animals.
Yeah,
that
just like how they're all cracked out on some sort of like, they're all just ooh.
Yeah,
just
I think they just like the night before, they just like, they do like some brain thing where they just like become animals.
Yeah.
And then they don't like switch off that animal instinct until like after the fight.
Yeah.
And so that's just how they like get rid of like their fears or whatever. They just like become these like animals. And they were animals. Like,
oh, yeah.
Stuff that they would
do. I mean, he was just eating a man. Like that happened.
Yeah. You gotta be pretty mad to just like take a bite of a man's neck. but that gorgeous tracking shot at the start, it's all one shot, I think, the village.
Mm-hmm.
You see our Viking hero climb up over the wall using his axe, and then like knock out a dude, and then jump down, knock out another dude, and then like murder that dude. And then he goes on, and it's sort of like just this tracking shot. It's just following him. You see some chaos in the background, some choreography.
Yeah.
Someone, you know, he's fighting dudes. And then, you know, maybe a minute or so later, it ends. But like, he captures the whole thing sort of in one go. I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
It's like there's a lot of great long shots in the movie that were done really, really well.
There's a few cuts along the way, like hidden cuts. I think there's one where it like passes through the main gate.
Oh, yep. That was probably.
And it goes to black. And then, like, you see him, like, come over the wall.
Right.
But, no, it's pretty cool stuff. And, like, I said this a lot. Like, I know you haven't played Ghost of Tsushima, but it's very similar in a way where, like, there's these sort of village pillage situations where it's, like, stealth mode.
Right.
And then you, like, sneak up on the village and you inspect it from a distance.
Yeah.
And then you just go ahead and just absolutely, like, murder everyone in the village. No, and I love that stuff. Like, I absolutely love that game. That game is fantastic. And there's like very, very similar elements. And like, I would honestly be surprised if Robert Eggers like didn't have inspiration from that game. Like, just me watching it, like I was making connections all the way through, which I have no complaint about because I love that stuff. But yeah, there's pretty heavy-handed stuff going on there.
Yeah, I did sort of enjoy like the whole one man against the world sort of thing that sort of comes in when the main character goes to Iceland and he's on the farm.
Yeah,
and he's like, oh, I could kill him right now, but like I want to just like destroy his life first.
Yeah,
and I feel like a lot of people in that situation would just like storm in and just like just kill the dude, but he's like, No, I have seen my fate. Yeah. You know, my fate is that we were fighting in the fire of, you know, hell or yeah. whatever.
He was making him, like, go absolutely, like, mad. Like,
right. losing some wild mind. Stuff.
I know.
Did some wild stuff.
Yeah.
That was, I don't know, at some stages I feel like the pacing got hit there a bit when he went to Iceland.
Yeah. But I was going to say, it was definitely more interesting in terms of, like, the first sort of village battle.
Like, I could have done with another battle like
that. I could have done with another battle like that.
Maybe one at the start when we see Ethan Hawke's character in action. That would be cool.
Yeah, well, the whole... Correct me if I'm wrong, but he wasn't a Viking at the start there. Like, that was just...
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Because he had a very different lifestyle. But then again, like, he had the whole sort of sequence with Willem Dafoe, who we haven't even talked about.
Yeah.
And
they're Ethan doing Hawke. Wild stuff and they're shouting and was, they're acting like animals.
Yeah, so maybe they were Vikings.
That's what made me think they were.
But I don't know. Yeah,
he's definitely with like some, you know, isolated Viking clan.
Yeah,
he's obviously, you know, been isolated from where he was before, but we don't know enough to say that, you know, he's on a different side of the country or you know, whatever. You know, it's. It's tough to sort of place where...
Well, he's probably in the north now. I mean, it's called the Northman.
Well, he certainly was at the start.
Yeah.
Maybe that's just the term for the character, for Vikings in general, because for somebody who lived in Britain, the Vikings would be the Northmen. I think that's what they were called. True. Because they came from the north. So that might just be the colloquial sort of
term
for... people who aren't Vikings referring to Vikings.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm unsure whether Ethan Hawke was a Viking or not. But
he I assume dress he was. Like one there.
Yeah. It's different. But either way, Olmec does become a Viking and it's quite fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
Him sort of, you know, with his huge traps, bro. My God.
God, he was absolutely
ruined. Traps were about the size of our heads combined, I think.
He was sitting in that, like, spa, and it was like he had four shoulders. Yeah. Like, it was just...
It's like he had, literally, like, two sets of shoulders. Yeah. He had a shoulder, and then it went up, and
it's like another General shoulder. Grievous.
Like, yeah, kind of insane. But speaking of Star Wars, that final battle between the two...
How are you going to bring Star Wars into this?
The final battle, bro, it's obvious Mustafar vibes, man. Like, the final battle between the two, you know, it leads up the entire movie. It's been building and building to this moment. And the final fight doesn't go for that long, to be honest.
No.
But it's intense.
It's very intense.
Like, the score, the visuals, like, there's literally, like, lava. You gotta be careful not to step in lava.
Yep.
Because that, you will be done.
I mean, yeah, that's just game over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be a very odd place to have a duel because I just feel like it would be worse off for everyone if you're fighting, but you also got to be careful to not like take a step back and land your foot in literally lava.
Yeah.
Like your foot would just disappear.
Your foot's gone.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You die because like you would fall into it. And, but, oh well, they got to have the theatrical sort of, you know, they got to have a fight in the gates of hell is what they called it. What did you think about
that? Before we, like, get into the very final ending, and we talk about, like, the whole, you know, predictability and how they died and how the ending finished, him dragging Nicole Kidman was just hilarious.
So after they sort of do their final plan. He goes into the house of his mum, and his mum's like, "Oh, you thought I was here against my will. Well, guess what? I wanted to do this the whole time, and I betrayed your father, and I wanted you to die." Ha ha ha. Very dumb decision by her, by the way. If you were in that position, the dumbest thing you could do is say that, "Oh, yeah, you know what? I wanted you dead. And I personally wanted you to die. Like I ordered it."
Yeah.
Just lie, bro. Just
but maybe
lie.
She's trying to go down with dignity, you know? Like, maybe that's tradition. Maybe you don't lie in those circumstances.
Oh, there's a lot of terrible stuff going on in this movie.
I don't think lying is going to hurt.
I mean, bro, she literally, like, conspires to kill her husband. Like, and while she's obviously in love with somebody else, so she's probably well-versed in,
probably
in lying.
You would think but, so.
But yeah, dumb decision by her. But the fact that she does get killed, and then the child gets killed as well, and then he just drags Nicole Kidman. And she's just like bumping up the steps.
I'm also a fan of the chapters. I love the chapters. I'm a sucker for chapters, man.
Was it chapters, or was it like
title cards?
Yeah, like as in destination.
Yeah,
was it, because one of them was like Iceland, wasn't it?
One of them was Iceland, but one of them was like the Nightblade feeds or something like that.
Oh, okay.
So it's not destination.
Right. Maybe so it is like a chapter, but it's Iceland, like Iceland would have been a chapter.
Iceland would have been a chapter. Yeah. Like they're traveling to Iceland now. Yeah. I think chapters are just such a cool concept in films in general. Like they help you lay out the story better.
Mm.
Obviously it's not gonna work for every single movie out there, but the Snyder Cut, I'm pretty sure, has chapters.
Yeah, very effective.
Very effective as well to sort of break up such a big runtime. And this is 2 hours and 16 minutes or something. So it's a pretty hefty movie. But yeah, I don't know. I just, something about chapters is just really cool, man.
It is cool, like cutting to black, going silent for a few seconds, and then seeing like a foreign sort of symbol pop up, and then you get like the explanation.
I think Fantastic Mr. Fox has chapters as well.
Probably, but
a lot of Wes Anderson films do,
but very like stylized. Like it wouldn't have cut to black or anything. It would have been like a, you know, like a title that doesn't look like a title at first.
Yeah,
it fades away.
Yeah,
but, you know, like a stylized sort of version of that.
Yeah,
yeah. Anything else you want to talk about before we get to the final battle?
That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
yeah.
I just, what did you think about? We haven't spoken a lot about the bad guy in this. What did you think about him?
I mean, at the start, I kind of touched on acting performance weren't necessarily like the main strong suit for me. Look, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't good either. Like, and at points as well, like I wasn't essentially rooting for like the main character either.
Yeah.
Like I wasn't. Yeah, kill him. Like,
kill the children.
At the beginning, like, honestly, like, if it had went either way, like, if the main character had died, if the evil dude had died, obviously they both died.
Yeah.
But if one stayed alive, one didn't, I wouldn't have really cared either way. So I think it just comes down to probably that drive and that purpose. We didn't really have that motivation, you know. Ethan Hawke's character wasn't essentially, you know, he wasn't built enough to make us care about whatever his name was, the main character's story, Anlith or whatever it was. So I think they just needed some more sort of elements going on there just to make that final battle more, you know, like the more stakes, essentially.
Yeah. More clearly defined, like what he's fighting for.
Mm.
Because I do think there's quite a good commentary on, you know, just the cycle of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Just like this mission that he's gone on and all these people he's killed. Like, even if his father was like a saint, like, is it worth all of that?
Yeah.
Like, his life, he was quite old anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's gone on this, you know, by the time he fulfilled this plan, his dad might have already just died of like disease or something, you know. Life expectancy wasn't particularly high back in those days. Like,
well, I think it's also like the close family ties, like,
yeah, and you know, the fact that he's like at the start, like, I'm your father, and if I die, you must avenge me, otherwise you won't die with honor or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's fair enough. And, you know, I get that's perfectly reasonable for the Viking to have that sort of, you know, there's a lot of revenge in the Viking TV series. But I think there's enough commentary on whether he should be doing the things he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't particularly root for him as well.
Yeah.
And at some stages I was like, okay, what is this movie trying to say? Is it trying to say that, you know, this behavior is, look how bad it is?
Mm.
Or is it just trying to say, like, this is a story and this is what happened, like, this is just how it goes?
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to gauge without a bit of, you know, director's
inside.
Yeah, inside.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do agree that the fact that the film rests on this father character, we needed more from the father character
100%.
To make the story work a bit.
That would have completely changed, like, the whole film. Like, the stakes and just, like, the mission would have been completely different. Mm. And you would have been rooting for this character the whole way through.
Yeah.
Like, that extra, like, 10-15 minutes would have just done so much for the movie.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dune's a good comparison because they do build that father character up, and then he does die and you think, oh, that's, he was such a good father.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, his son's going to miss him.
Yep.
His son's going to be really scarred by the fact that he's now dead, and
yep.
he's going to have to go on this mission to get some sort of, you know, revenge or vengeance or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But in this, it's almost like if you were to start Dune at the battle, you know, at the battle where the ships are being blown up and then the father dies.
Yeah.
It's like it cuts out a lot of that development.
Yeah.
You know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
Yeah. 100%. 100%. We needed that influence from the father figure.
Yeah.
It just lacked that a bit. Yeah.
All right. So that final battle, I mean, color was turned up to 11. Everything
yep.
becomes red and yep. orange, and it's kind of fantastic. Like, I will admit, I loved every second of that final battle.
Same.
I had absolutely no idea what was going to happen. I know you did, but for me, I thought he could die and the bad guy could win, because just from the story structure,
mm-hmm.
this guy's posed as the bad guy and the main character is clearly, you know, the hero of the story.
Yeah,
he's not a hero, but the story sort of, it's structured that way, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm just saying that because he murders children, so you can't really be classified as a hero. But, you know, the good guy could win, the bad guy could win, they could both lose, they could somehow both win.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of things could have happened here, and I honestly had no idea what was going to happen. And I
yep.
really enjoyed that. It was very intense, and I enjoyed it.
Well, I think the predictability just came from the whole fact that they just kept on pushing this whole I'm not going to die if it's not going to be in battle sort of thing.
Right.
And like, that was very heavy-handed from the start. Like, it was, I'm going to die in battle, otherwise I suck, you know?
Yeah, like, that's like the Viking thing. They got to die in battle to, like, go to Valhalla or
yeah,
something.
And then when they brought, like, the whole children into the equation with the heart family tree, I was kind of like, okay, yeah, the last thing he's going to do is die to make sure, sorry, he's going to die and kill his uncle to make sure his kindred succeed him. They
yeah.
keep on going.
Yeah.
So I kind of pieced that together, and I hate to be the one that says, I guessed the story before it finished, but I did see it coming. And that's not necessarily
in
bad. Yeah. Because like we've been saying, the final fight was bloody epic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was kind of like the Mustafar fight.
Mm.
If it was R-rated, yep. if it was slightly shorter,
yep.
and if it had, like, I don't know, I want to say more competent direction, to be honest. Like,
yeah, you're right, man. You're right. George Lucas cannot direct.
just imagine with the visuals like that,
mm.
Anakin and Obi-Wan, like, going at it.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, Alexander Skarsgård, he had, like, ash on his body. Like, he literally looked like Anakin at one stage. He had, like, black, like, ash
yep.
all over his body.
Yep.
And, yeah, I was just, it was
well,
it was great.
Maybe Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh,
don't get your hopes up.
I don't think so.
If it looks anything like Book of Boba Fett, we're screwed.
Yeah. But I enjoyed the final fight, and the finale was interesting. You know, he chops his head off, as in the good guy chops the bad guy's head off, but then you don't really see that his sword, the bad guy's sword, has you know, gone into the good guy until he lets go, and you're like, hang on, that sword's just floating there. I was like, is this some supernatural stuff? Why is the sword floating there? Oh, it's in him. Okay, I see what's going on here. But yeah, and then obviously the sort of ascension to Valhalla at the end. It kind of always had to end like that.
100%.
If I thought about it, perhaps I could have got along there, but I think I was just enjoying it so much. Like, I was just enthralled by the duel.
I think that's why I came to the movie in the first place, was just to see, like, mass brutality and, like, decapitation.
Shirtless men with swords. Hold up. Hey, you know, there is a manly desire to go to battle. Yep. You know, it is satisfying to watch this sort of stuff. You know, that's why there's, like, an infatuation with, like, knights and soldiers and, you know, they call them sandals movies or, you know, swords and sandals movies.
Mm-hmm.
Movies like Gladiator and Troy and, you know, just ultra-violent historical movies that are just, like, male testosterone.
Yeah,
like,
this
injected into you.
This could be, like, incredibly, like, sexist, but I mean, this is a man's movie. Like, come on.
Well, like, literally, like, it is very, like, men centered, but as it was back then, obviously, like, it's like all white because that's, like, the region that it's set in.
Yep.
And, like, we're not at that stage where, like, people are hopping continents yet.
Yeah.
Like, there is only, it's only sort of just.
That's your world, essentially. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the Vikings literally thought that if you went too far out to sea, you'd fall off the edge of the earth.
Yeah.
That's how dumb they were, bro. You know, we're not at the stage where, you know, people are crossing countries and living in the country they want to live in. You know, you just sort of, you are where you are.
And you're just kind of screwed. Yeah.
You know, if you're unlucky, you could just die of a disease when you're like 17.
Yeah.
And that's it. Like, you know, you can't do much about that.
Well, you get the common cold, you're dead.
Yep, see ya.
An infected nail, you might die.
Yeah. It could go wrong for anybody at any stage, like, no matter who you are. Like, if you're the king, like, doesn't matter, you know, you get dysentery, goodbye. Too bad. Yeah. So, I really enjoyed the film, and I had a great time at cinemas. I was a happy customer walking out. Music segment. So, going into the Spotify playlist this week, which you can find by visiting the link in the YouTube description, is the song Storm at Sea. Do you remember when it was playing?
No.
And then, there were storms at...
There were storms at sea.
Yeah, was it the original one when he climbs onto the boat?
When he was a kid?
When he's an adult to go to the farm. And that's where he sort of first meets Anya Taylor-Joy.
No, I think it's more so when he's a kid and we see the whole sequence where he's like trying to sail the boat.
Right.
But it might have been.
Yeah.
That as well.
Either way, I think the score was reliably good, but it was very sort of like similar beats throughout the film.
Yeah.
Like there's no like one track where you're like, oh, that track in the final duel was like something else. Like it was just consistently very good.
Yeah. And we should probably state that for the record, like this was a very good score and these people are like nobodies. Like they haven't done anything before. And they've just, like, out of nowhere, like, Robert Eggers is just like, okay, I'm going to bring on these people that have no experience. And, like, they absolutely killed it with the score.
Absolutely
man.
Nailed it.
Yeah.
I think maybe there's some, you know, they have, like, a special interest in the Vikings. Sort of, you know, because I think there are people out there that are like, oh, yeah, I'm a musician and I particularly... perform Viking music. Like there are lots of sort of clubs and societies like that, you know, like the historical accurate. You know, I mean, there are people that dress up as knights and go to battle in, you know, here in Australia. So you just imagine like how it is in like places like Norway with like Viking stuff, you know, there's probably a lot of people out there that are like very into Viking culture.
That's a very interesting point. Like I could definitely see that, you know, being the reason, like, there's only got to be so many, you know, like, music scorers out there that have a hobby of Icelandic Vikings.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably only one in the world, which is the one that did this.
Yeah.
I think there was two that are responsible for the soundtrack. But yeah, that might have actually been the case. That does sound like it's correct.
Because it did seem very authentic.
Yeah, it comes back down to historical accuracy. Like you said, Robert Eggers said himself, this is the most accurate Viking tale out there. So, yeah.
Speaking of Robert Eggers, if he was to do... I mean, we had a discussion before the podcast that we'd love to see him do a pirate film with this sort of, like, love for the historical accuracy and seriousness and, you know, give us a simple but effective story for, like, you know, historical thing. But and he said recently that he would never do a film in modern day. Cool. He just enjoys historical films.
Like historical pieces.
Brilliant, because, you know, Ridley Scott, he keeps doing it, but he keeps doing, like, mediocre ones.
Yeah.
You know, Gladiator was great, but, like, The Last Duel was okay. And he's doing, like, this Napoleon movie with Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah.
And, like, Ridley Scott seems like the only person who's, like, willing to do historical dramas.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's kind of a mediocre director nowadays. So I'm very happy to see a young person come up to do this sort of stuff.
Well, it's stuff like The House of Gucci where it's like, why are you doing this?
Yeah, that was a weird choice in particular for him.
But then again, you know, every now and then he does stuff like The Martian, which is...
Yeah, quite good.
I think it's quite a good movie.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So anyway, my question was, Robert Eggers, he's obviously going to continue doing films for, you know...
his life.
Yeah, for like 30 plus years now.
Yeah.
And he's only going to do historical films. What would you want to see him do, apart from a pirate film, which we discussed? Because that would be cool. We need a good pirate film.
I mean...
it's not got Johnny Depp in it. Not that there's anything bad with Johnny Depp, of
course. Yeah, but obviously we need another pirate out there. Obviously, I've talked about Ghost of Tsushima, but maybe like a...
They are making a Ghost of Tsushima movie.
They are making a Ghost of Tsushima movie. I don't have much faith in that. But maybe like a black and white... Producers
of Uncharted, bro.
Yeah. Oh, no.
That's just how it would be. It's Sony, so...
No.
That's just how it would be.
Maybe like a black and white box... square aspect ratio, like a, I think his name's Akira Kurosawa.
Yeah.
Maybe like just samurai. Like an old school samurai movie, with just like hints of sort of the lighthouse humor mixed with just absolutely
violence
from the Northmen. I think that could be quite cool.
Yeah, that could be cool. Yeah, in terms of just like a samurai story, but like an authentic one, not like, you know, Tom Cruise is a samurai. That movie's quite good.
There's a Tom Cruise, The Last Samurai.
The Last Samurai, yeah. And don't get me wrong, that movie's fantastic, but Tom Cruise being a samurai, I mean, it's not very historically accurate, let's just say that. Yes, it is. Maybe it is, but I have a feeling that Tom Cruise wasn't really a samurai. But I think it would be cool to see him maybe tackle something in Egypt, sort of, you know, in that sort of time period, because I feel like we haven't really
gotten... I love Egypt. I've got like a very unhealthy like infatuation with Egypt mythology.
Mm-hmm.
Like any ancient history assignment, Egypt. Yeah. That's what I was doing.
Fair enough. Yeah. Now, I would love to see whatever he does next, really. I hope that he sort of deviates further and further away from the horror genre, only just because he's done that already.
A few times,
and you know, his most horror film was The Witch, and I feel like that's his weakest film. So I want to see him, you know, try and do some bigger things. He's progressing upwards in terms of budget, so I still want to see him keep that artistic flair that has made his movies so good so far.
Yep.
But take on a big project. I mean, we know that talented actors like working with him because Anya's a repeat customer.
Yeah, well, he's kind of like Nolan with that, how he has like his set cast and he doesn't really, you know, go outside of that. Willem Dafoe, Anya Taylor-Joy.
So the guy who was the captain on the sailboat at the very end, he was the main guy in The Witch. The guy, he talks to the main character, and the main character's like, you know, take her to this island or whatever. he's the main guy. He plays Anya's father.
Okay, interesting.
So he's obviously repeat as well. So it's a good sign to see, like, people, and obviously very talented actors and actresses want to work with him. So that goes to show that he's doing interesting stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, Willem Dafoe is, like, one of the best actors out there to ever do that, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. Final thoughts?
Okay, let's... Do you want me to go?
Yeah.
Okay. I thoroughly enjoyed this in the movie theater. I remember leaning over to you and saying, we weren't prepared for this. And that was, like, right at the very start. Like, there was some intense stuff going on at the start. It's a beautiful looking movie, man. Like, we said it at the beginning of the podcast. Film studios need to start up in their game if this is $90 million and it's starting to look like this. Beautiful cinematography. I love the Icelandic landscapes and how it's all practical. They actually went to set and did it. We need to see that more often, you know. Sound design was honestly some of the best I've seen. Dune was fantastic, but this is just up there with Dune, man. In my eyes, I think the sound design was just so clean. Costumes were honestly some of the best I've ever seen. I know you're a big fan of Dune's costumes. This was just on another level for me. This was spectacular. What else did we talk about? I think my biggest issue is probably this story. I just feel like I've seen it like a million times, and it's just sort of, it's been done in a new skin. Like, it's got,
I get what you're saying.
Like, it's just set in a different era.
Yeah.
So that's probably my biggest concern. And you've raised the point of the father and how he needed to be more built to have some weight to the story. And that would have made it like a million times better. But in terms of a movie, this is extremely solid. I think Robert Eggers is just, he's doing different stuff, man. And you got to respect that. Like, it's everything he does is original. This is the only thing I've seen from him, but from what you've shown me, you know, he's just on another level. I thoroughly enjoyed this movie. I can't see myself rewatching anytime soon, but just for a standalone watch, it was great.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to stick with the A-.
Yeah, fair enough. I think this film is like nothing I've ever seen before, just like how The Lighthouse certainly wasn't anything I've ever seen before.
Yep.
And, you know, The Witch was, you know, kind of similar to some things I'd seen, but, you know, had a weird sort of ending. So I automatically respect the director for that, you know. Give me something that I'm going to walk out of the theater and at least go, geez, I've never seen a movie like that, you know. at the very least, like, even if you're going to give me a terrible movie, at least give me something new and fresh so I can at least, you know, be interested in that.
Yep.
Right? The worst sort of movie for me is a movie that deals with IP that we know and stuffs it up.
Yeah.
You know, and makes a bad movie with content that should easily be great.
Mm.
Right, or just completely disrespects it. That's the worst sort of movie for me. You know, that's because even unique bad movies are still unique, you know. But if you're going to give me a bland, boring, and not a unique film, then I'm just not going to, you know, it's not even going to get up in the D range. Like, it's going to be lower than that, you know.
Well, I mean, lowest is F, so.
Yeah, so there's that F, E, you know.
Yeah.
Sort of that's the sort of range there, you know. So that's what you get secluded to. But for me, this film was very intense, and very visceral, and had some good reliable performances, but better sort of cinematography, sound design, all of those sort of elements that you really look for if you're sort of really interested in sort of dissecting the elements.
Yeah. But
even if you're just like a standard, you just want to go and see a good movie and never see it again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a good time.
Yep.
And I thoroughly enjoyed it, especially that all of the fight scenes. Really, really good. So in terms of whether I'll revisit it, I think I will when it comes out on 4K eventually, but I'm in no sort of rush. Like, I'm not sort of like counting down the days to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
But I will revisit it because Robert Eggers is an interesting director and I feel like he deserves some attention. So
Yep.
I'm very interested to see what he's going to do. I'm going to go with an A minus as well. I sort of came out of the theater thinking, you know, it could be an A maybe.
Same.
But I'll drop it down. Just I think just recency bias
Yep.
got me a bit there. But when saying that, it still is my favorite movie of the year so far. I think it's better than The Batman, just from a pacing standpoint. Like I think it's much more effective in the time given than The Batman. And I think Batman could have been a lot better if you change a few things. Whereas this, I'd struggle to sort of like, I wouldn't have much confidence telling Robert Eggers, like, if he asked for my advice, like, how do I make this film better? Like, I would kind of struggle to like point to a specific thing and say, like, this was bad, you should have changed that. Because either it's something that's completely historically accurate, so like me saying change that would like make the movie worse, or you know it's a fundamental thing. But perhaps maybe I'd recommend like 5 minutes of the father sort of getting a bit more developed.
Same.
But yeah, whereas I would happily sit down with Matt Reeves, and if he genuinely wanted my criticism, I could give him some criticism.
Same.
So for this, I'd have less. So it's my favorite movie of the year, I think, so far, maybe.
I
But
noticed you downgraded the Batman.
yeah, I did, because I was like, this is above the Batman, but I didn't want to give this a 4.5 out of 5 star. So I did the reasonable thing, and I went back, and I hope nobody would notice, but of course you did.
I
So
noticed.
so I downgraded Vengeance, and I put Vengeance up in
Which
first. So
vengeance?
number one is Vengeance, number two is Vengeance. So
Yes.
on that note, we'll sign off for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. Thanks for listening. And next episode, we are going to
Mamma
do
Mia.
Mamma Mia.
Let us know in the comments below if
Yeah,
anyone's still watching.
if you've got any recommendations.
If you got any recommendations and whereabouts you would rank this in terms of Ant-Man and the Wasp
And Licorice Pizza.
and Licorice
Yeah,
Pizza,
what's the scale?
where does it sit for you?
Yes, from 1 to 10 being one Licorice Pizza and 10 being Ant-Man and the Wasp. Though I don't think Ant-Man and the Wasp deserves a 10 for anything, you know, negative or positive. It just feels wrong to give Ant-Man and the Wasp a 10. So yeah, but on that note, we'll leave that scintillating question with you. So enjoy thinking about that. Goodbye.
Yep.